Verulam Sports.
Hello, welcome to Verulam Sports Podcast with your host, Tony Wright. Now, sports fans, how amazing was our recent Olympics and how phenomenal was it that it actually got underway? And amazing successes right across the board for Team GB, not least the diving board with Tom Daly, but our swimmers led the way. A record-breaking haul of 8 medals for GB swimmers. Now, to talk about how that might ripple down and have an impact for all of us would-be swimmers, it is an honour and indeed a huge privilege to be welcoming back to Verulam Sports Podcasting the phenomenal Ed Acura, Head of Corporate Partnerships for the Black Swimming Association. Ed, welcome back. How are you?
Thank you very much. Thank you. It's always a pleasure to be speaking with you and honour to be on your show.
Oh, you're far too kind, sir. I salute you. Marvellous. Well, Ed, so much to talk about. But first of all, before we drill into the unique challenges of the black community when it comes to swimming, again, just want to touch on that phenomenal Olympic experience, because it isn't often, is it, for the casual sports fan that we get to encounter the great sport of swimming. So just give me an idea of how crucial it is, just across the board, that that fantastic sport gets that wonderful showcase at the Olympics.
That was awesome, mate. If you had asked me this question about 2-3 years ago, I would have said, I would have said, it would have probably meant nothing to me.
Sure.
But as you know, within the last 2 years, I just started learning how to swim, and I'm very much aware of the issue with this proportionate amount of black people not swimming within the black, within the black community. And we do not swim. 95% of black adults and 80% of black children in England do not swim. I've been reciting these figures. I can almost say it in my sleep. But it's to see it on Olympics and to see something very, very special happening.
Yes.
And you know what I'm about to say? And the name will, to those that don't know, Alice Dearing.
Yes, indeed.
She's the only black swimmer in Team GB. And she's the first black female swimmer to ever make it to the Olympics.
And I tell you what, didn't she do well? She didn't claim a medal, but to be number one was phenomenal. And 19th, very creditable, very, very challenging. I mean, she was in the granddaddy of all the swimming events, wasn't she? That 10-kilometer swim.
Yes, she was. But what's even bigger than that? The things are the fact that she actually took part and she actually made it to the Olympics is huge. And when I say it's huge, this will put it into context. The Summer Olympics started, women started swimming in the Summer Olympics in 1912. That's 109 years ago, I believe. And it's taken 109 years for a black female to represent Great Britain in the Olympics in swimming. You know, so what she's achieved is amazing. It's huge. And what it does is it sends a message down to the younger generation that, hold on, I can do it too. You know, she's doing it, I can do it too. And that's a big thing. That's a massive thing.
Absolutely huge. And, you know, amazing credit. And I know already she's excited for the Paris Games. And I'm sure she will continue to go from strength to strength. Yeah. Because you made a great point there with those quite sad statistics with regards 95% of the kind of black community. At the moment, using my words carefully, don't swim. We'll talk about your documentary, Blacks Can't Swim. But it isn't the case that the blacks can't swim, clearly, because Alice Dearing there at the elite level is showing us all that she can, that we can. So just give me an idea here. And we talk barriers, don't we? We talk challenges. Yeah. I guess, how important do you think it will be, the ripple effect, that amazing individual, Alice Dearing, will have for the community, showing that, of course, absolutely, blacks can swim?
Oh, yes. It's never been we'll talk about the film in a minute, but basically, there's never been a point whereby I believe that blacks couldn't swim. Mm. Blacks always can swim. The problem, the issue that we have is blacks do not swim. Mm-hmm. And like we have, 5% of blacks in Great Britain swim on a regular basis. Mm. Only 5%, which is not great. And swimming is not, so I say, part of our everyday life within the community. And hence, we get young adults growing up not being able to swim. And we live in an environment whereby nowadays, you know, we all go on holidays, well, before the pandemic, that is. Mm. We go on holidays, we go to the beaches and all that kind of thing. So we're surrounded by water.
Mm.
You know, and I always quote my mother. My mother is a big fan of water safety, huge fan. She believes in it. She believes in water safety. Her idea of water safety is stay away from the water and you will not drown. And,
it was as easy as that.
that's how I grew up. You know, stay away from the water and you'll be okay. But we all know that that's not possible. You know, we have to have a basic understanding of how, you know, we interact with water, you know, drowning prevention, water safety, and swimming. So basically, going back to what I said previously, it's huge. You know, with what Alice is doing, it's huge because it's, you know, it's a conversation. You know, it's a conversation stuff. It's, you know, Black people are swimming in the Olympics in England, and you know, I can do that too. So it's big.
To use that word big, I would say it's massive. And the reason I think it's maybe even bigger than we actually yet appreciate is because coming back to that shocking statistic there, at the moment, 95% of the Black community do not swim. It just stands to reason, doesn't it? If you don't have that kind of family connection, maybe in your early years getting into the pool, or maybe if you're just kind of working with that myth, of course, best intentions of, for instance, your mother, just keep away from water, you'll be fine, right? If you don't have that family link, where else do we find it? We need, don't we, these role models to literally smash these myths.
Yeah, and that's very, very true. It's because I was on a conversation with on a telephone conversation with one of the governing bodies, and the education system came up in conversation. Oh yeah, but swimming is part of the curriculum. And it is. Swimming is part of the curriculum. Because if you look at the curriculum, it states that by the time the child leaves primary school, the child should be able to swim 25 meters, should be able to perform two different strokes, and also perform a water safety test. And that's the three main criteria. But they say that 70% of children are able to achieve this by the time they leave primary school. You know, 70%. But when you go to the Black and ethnic minority areas, it goes down to 42%.
So almost half. I mean, that's a huge drop.
Yeah, that's right.
And there are clearly cultural factors at play here, aren't they? And these are massive, and they're not going to change just because Alice has done her thing and will continue to do her thing. Hence why I guess you're there at the moment. And I know your mission is a big one. Weirdly, not to exist, isn't it?
Exactly, that's right. The whole idea of the Black Swimming Association is we would set up the organization as a bridge between the Black and Asian communities that do not swim and the swim sector. So there's this big, you know, there's a big gap between these two forces. These swim governing bodies probably have not been able to get into the community because they don't understand the community, you know. And so basically we need a bridge, and that's where we are, you know, to bridge the gap. And that's
important, isn't it? I was talking with Homa Abba, Abisi, I beg your pardon, who does great things over at Active Luton.
And that's right.
She's phenomenal in the sense that she speaks, puts me to shame because I speak English. I like to think reasonably fluently. And when I'm drunk, I kind of flatter myself I can Franglish, but I can't. The point of that is Homer speaks up to five languages, Urdu, Punjabi, etc., etc.
Yeah.
So literally, when she's talking to people from those communities in the pool, many of whom are literally terrified at us, I'm sure you can remember, it's not just encouraging, like, you know, me saying it as a white guy, I'll go for it, my dear, you can do it, but literally on their language, on their level. So I guess, talk to me about that important role, specifically within the Black community.
But it's all about relatability. Mm-hmm. If you can relate to something, then you'll do it. If you see something as alien, mm-hmm. then you won't do it. I mean, when was it in the there was an article on me myself a few months back by the Guardian, which mm-hmm. you know, the only black kid in the pool, and that was based on one of the actors in the film, mm-hmm. and he said every time he goes to the pool, when he was young, he went to the pool. He was the only black kid in the pool mm-hmm. because our community doesn't see it as a priority. Mm-hmm. And that was touched on in a film called Black Cancer. It was the mm-hmm. first film I did, first film documentary that I put out last year. About and a lot of people were talking about it, saying that the reason why I can't swim or I didn't swim was because my parents didn't see it as a priority. Mm-hmm. And if your parents don't see it as a priority, it's never going to happen. And going back to what I was talking about, the education system, some people say, oh, but swimming is part of the curriculum. So why are black children in particular not able to swim, mm-hmm. especially when it's taught in schools? And I always, take it back to, you're in a school, most schools don't have pools, so they mm-hmm. have to take the children to the leisure center. Mm-hmm. You've got about an hour, you've got 30 kids, you're going to put them in a minibus or coach or whatever, mm-hmm. take them to the leisure center, they get out, kids are messing around as they mm-hmm. do. By the time they get into the pool, you only have about 20 minutes, 25 yeah. minutes for 30 kids. Mm-hmm. So what they do is that, and I think the only thing that they can do is they separate the kids mm-hmm. to those by skill set. Mm-hmm. If you have some skill set, some swimming ability, you get into the water. Mm-hmm. And if you don't, then they put you by the side, put a ring around you, no mm-hmm. bubbles and such. And you tend to find out that those that make it to the pool and to actually learn to do something mm-hmm. or actually get involved in something are those that parents take them swimming outside of the education system.
Gotcha. And I guess that's the cycle that we're trying to break here, isn't it?
That's right.
Because again, it comes down to that immediate role model in your life. And, you know, like learning a language, again, I'm rather ignorant in that regard. And I'm certainly no Olympic swimmer, I must say, too. But one thing that I'm always amazed about with my friends who are very proficient with languages is that mm-hmm. often they had access to that from a young age, maybe multi languages in their home environment, et cetera, et cetera. I speak to friends of mine in across the continent. Mm-hmm. The Dutch, from by the time they're seven, are conversant in up to 4 or 5 languages because they've been taught it from that young age.
That's
if we're not getting that early impetus, then we're kind of, I guess, faced with this scenario here with swimming. So it is a culture, it really is a culture that you are working with and working to change, I suppose.
Definitely. And another statistic is that if the mother and the father don't swim, if the parents don't swim, the child mm-hmm. only has 13% chance of learning how to swim. So it's been something that happens in the family, mm-hmm. something that happens in the culture. It's mm-hmm. very, very important. And from a role model perspective, if I was a 6-year-old boy or 5-year-old boy or 10 or even 13-year-old mm-hmm. boy, and I see someone that I look up to swimming, mm-hmm. and I say, oh, Stormzy, he swims.
Yes.
Okay, I swim as well. But we don't see that. We don't see. So I'm putting it out there. All these, all these musicians, all these role models, these actors, and
yes. career,
if you swim, come out and talk about it, because I'm pretty sure that young boy down the street, if he hears it and he hears it, he will want yep. to do it as well. And
you know what? I saw a skit on this recently, slightly parodying, but very. They say, don't they, that when you've been kind of having the Mickey taken out of you in this level, you've really made it. I'm talking about Idris Elba, and there was a fantastic mm-hmm. skit on him, basically, where this comedian was saying, he can do everything. He's a spy. He's a DJ. He's an actor. He's got it all. He's capable of everything. I'm fairly sure. Again, just working with that the guy could doggy paddle, and like you say, obviously I'm not connected to him, but Eddie, Idris, if you're listening, then please, I am dead right, because again, it is that role model, change of perception dialogue that we really need to engender here, isn't it?
Yeah, most definitely, and but that can go a long way. And now, and another thing that I've been saying to the sector, saying to the swimming sector, that we need to start about talk about making swimming fun. making it exciting. You know, it's because we talk so much about water. You need to learn how to swim, because if you don't know how to swim, when you get into water, difficulty, you will be thrive. So that puts the fear into people.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, and that's, you know, oh, if it's that dangerous, that's going to stay away from it. But if it's fun, if it's exciting, people will do it. And I've said this story many, many, many times, but I'll say it again. When I was finishing doing the last scene of the sequel, I spoke to the youth that were in the film. I said, the last scene is going to be in the pool. And there was so much resistance. What? You didn't tell us that it was going to be in the pool? You didn't tell us we're going to have to do any swimming? Nah. And I said, listen, chill. And this is about 9-10 people.
Sure thing.
And they said, and I said, you just calm down, and we're just going to get into the pool, and we're just going to film the scenes. You don't have to swim. But there was a lot of resistance. And this is even people who said you could swim. Yeah. So so I said, okay, what's the reason why you don't want to get this? And they came up with the lamest excuse.
Yes.
Oh, I don't have any swimming kits, and I don't have my goggles. I don't have any goggles. I said, not a problem. The BSA's strategic partner is Speedo. Just give me your sizes, and everything will be there. So when they run out of excuses, because at the end of the day, when it comes to excuses, I was the master of excuses. You know, I use every excuse in the book not to swim. I've
got to tell you, that comes back to relatability, sir.
Exactly. So going back to the story. So I booked the pool from 10 o'clock to 2 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon. I said, just be there, and we'll just shoot the scene, and we'll go. So what the director, Mr. Rex, and I did was we set it up so we had music playing in the background. We had people there doing their hair and all that kind of thing. So it was very, very, very... So people kept going, okay, yeah. And we did a scene. Shot the scenes and everything. Then I had to leave. I left at about 2 o'clock or just around about that time. But half an hour later, I get a call from the director saying, Ed, is there any way you can extend the time? And I'm like, what, are we running behind schedule? He goes, nah, they're having so much fun in the pool, they just don't want to come out of it.
So good.
You see, and up until now, they're asking me, oh, so when are we going to do that again? We had a good time. When are we going to do that again? So if you make it fun, make it exciting, people will swim.
And, you know, it's a beautiful documentary. I haven't seen the original. I've got to get that into my life. But I have enjoyed the sequel, brilliantly entitled Keep It Simple, Stupid, Blacks Can't Swim, the sequel. Now, on that, it's one of the things that I thought was really cool in that, Ed, was when you almost have this kind of visual graphic appear, which is like the voice of society and all these excuses that people have. Because again, you know, we all do it on whatever level. We have our barriers and we, as you say, excuses, and they're internalized, aren't they? I've got to tell you, I thought that was a really cool aspect of the film. Yeah. Just give me an idea again of that, these voices, I guess, that we are wrestling with and how they are a challenge.
So that was an idea I had when I was writing the script for a film called Last Can't Swim. So we needed something that would, you know, dramatize it a bit. So we had the interviews, we had people talking about their journey, why they swim, why they don't swim. Then I had the drama, which is basically me wearing a life jacket everywhere I go, because I just couldn't, you know, deal with, you know, the sphere of water and all that. But then I needed something. And that's why a film called Blacks Can't Swim. So basically it's based on my, when I say Blacks Can't Swim, I'm talking about society telling me that I can't swim. And that's what I listen to all my life. I listen to, you know, people say, oh, you know, the black people have heavy bones, black people can't build that kind of, and so I believed that I couldn't swim, you know. At first, it might have started as an excuse not to swim, but then I'm pretty sure I started to believe in it, that black people can't float, we can't do this, we can't do that. So basically, the whole voice of Mr. Society is saying what society is saying. And there's a lot of people out there right now that listen to society and that, you know, telling them that they can't swim because of this, that, and the other. So that's why we have to have Mr. Society, and that eerie kind of voice, but you go watch the film, you know, to see it. Yeah, it's very, very important to the film.
An absolutely awesome documentary, Ed. I know it's very easy to access, but just remind me and people listening, how can we get both of those documentaries, Blacks Can't Swim and, of course, that awesome sequel, Blacks Can't Swim, the sequel. How can we access that?
Amazon. They're all on Amazon, so just go on Amazon Prime. They're both there. Mm-hmm. If, the sequel's on Sky Store, so if you want to watch it on Sky Store, it's on there as well. It's on Vimeo. They're all on Vimeo as well. It's on. You know, they're everywhere. You just have to go to Google. As long as you can find Google, you can find any of these films. Yeah.
I personally heartily recommend it. Seriously, I've not seen the original, but truly enjoyed the sequel. It's very well produced and very thought provoking, and it will make you think. And I think that's always a good thing. Coming back though to the amazing Alice Dearing, obviously she can't do it on her own. And her focus, of course, is to be what she is, an awesome athlete. Let's not lose sight of that. But I've got to ask you this, because we're talking here about societally imposed doubts. I guess in terms of that, as her as a not only a black person, but a female too, because some of these societally imposed doubts that we live and we breathe are to do with equipment, aren't they? And the different body shapes that women face generally, but of course that is quite particular to the black and ethnic minority cultures. And of course, you know, the politics of hair is a fascinating one. Just give me an idea specifically about Alice and her ability to be a role model and shatter those myths when it comes not just to generally blacks can't swim, we know they can, but black women can't swim.
Yes, so the issue with black women not swimming is it's a tricky one, and I'm gonna. There's a number of reasons, but the main one I would say is hair.
Mm-hmm.
And some more statistics: black women spend more time and money on their six times more money and time on their hair than a Caucasian woman. That's fact. Black women spend £88 million. Mm. I think I don't know if it's pounds or dollars, but either of them on an annual basis.
Mm-hmm.
So from this alone, you can gather that black women spend a lot of time and money on their hair.
Mm-hmm.
So if spending all this money and time on their hair, getting into the water is going to damage it. The chlorine is going to damage it. They're going to stay away. They're not going to get into the water.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why you speak to a lot of black women, they'll tell you that this is the reason why I do not swim. The mothers are more likely to take their children swimming than the fathers.
Mm-hmm.
But if the mothers are not swimming, then the children are not going up. So you see the knock-on effects. See, Alice has an afro.
Mm-hmm.
So has my daughter. My daughter's had an afro. My daughter, mm-hmm. when my daughter first saw Alice, when she first met Alice, she was like, my daughter's 10 years old.
Right.
When she first met Alice, she was like, wow. You know, there's somebody that, like me, that swims to an elite level.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know. So basically, it's the inspiration is there.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, and Alice can't do it with her hair.
Mm-hmm.
So let's not use that as a reason not to swim. Mm-hmm. You know? And so I'm pretty sure with what Alice has done and what the manufacturers, like, you know, of these Afro hair, natural hair swim caps are doing, it's going to open up so much, you know, it's going to open up the way airways for a lot of people who are not swimming because of those reasons to start swimming. So it's a big thing. It's big. It's massive.
Again, let's not lose sight of the context here. As you rightly said, in the plus 100 years, it's a crying shame that Alice is the very first. But at the end of the day, we need that. We need that as pioneers, don't we? Because, you know, I think to a different Olympic sport, for instance, cycling, where Britain is, you know, the three most decorated Olympians all time come from cycling. But it really, if you think about it, cycling in terms of English, Great Britain sporting culture is only really in the last sort of 20 years or so. Before then, I know Chris Boardman maybe was a bit of a one-off, but it was historically the domain of, you know, the French, we think the Tour de France, Dutch, a little bit Antidipian in Australia and New Zealand as well. But my point is, not that it's a precisely the same analogue, but it's phenomenal what can happen, what momentum can build when pioneers lead the way, I suppose.
Yeah. But yeah, and you've said it all. Yeah, most definitely, because somebody has to open this. Someone has to open the door, kick the door in for all of us to come at, you know, and just follow. So yeah, so that's why we need. That's why someone. I told Alice that you're a pioneer. You're a superhero. So you know, there's a song out there called "The Deering Effect," which mm-hmm. I created based on, you know, it's paying homage to what Alice has done. And I said, you're a superhero. You might not see it, you might not feel it, but you are. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things that you've created. You've created a, you know, a situation whereby now there's going to be a lot of younger people from all, you know, not only black, not only Asian, but of all walks of life, watching what you're doing and wanting to do it. And if what you do touches 100 people, then it's it's been massive, and it's done much already.
Just love it, and I'm sure that effect will continue to ripple. I know for a fact that Alice Deering will be focused in on Paris very soon and will continue to be a pioneer and an ambassador, and we will look forward to watching and witnessing her growth and development. But let's not lose sight of what tremendous work already she has achieved. Now, Ed, I know the big vision. It sounds almost counterintuitive, but I appreciate it for you guys there at the Black Swimming Association is not to exist, because your mission will be accomplished, right? It's a big mission, but you are on the case. I value your energy and commitment to it. Now, people listening may be intrigued, maybe wanting to learn a little bit more. What is the best website to engage with everything to do with the Black Swimming Association?
If you want to find out about the Black Swimming Association, just go to thebsa.co.uk. So, yeah, thebsa.co.uk. And we're on there. And then it talks about how we started, the four co-founders of the Black Swimming Association, which is Alice Deering, Saren Jones, Daniel Obey, and myself. And then we were all four of us. We only met for the very first time just over a year ago. We were all doing something to do with campaigning against the disproportionate amount of black people not swimming. So basically, we're all encouraging people to swim. You know, I was using my films. Alice works for the BBC. She's a journalist for the BBC. She did a number of documentaries. Saren works for the BBC. Alice, obviously, she works. She's on Team GB. And Danielle, she's an inventor of waterproof headscarf. So basically, we all had something different, and we all came together as one voice to try and get the message out there. And the reason why we set up the organization was that we found out very, very quickly that there was no representation for the Black and Asian community at the top level. So basically, where policies were being made, where programs were being designed, where, you know, processes were being, you know, there was no black representation. Hence the reason why the community, there's only so much you can do that, and, you know, as a swim school, as a, yeah. So basically, we needed an organization that will represent the community where policy and processes and designs will be made. Hence the reason why we set up the organization, the Black Swimming Association. But the whole idea of the Black Swimming Association, like I said, is to bridge that gap between the swim sector and the community. And the whole reason why there is a need for the Black Swimming Association, because of these high numbers of drowning, of not swimming, of limited knowledge of water safety and drowning prevention. But our whole mission is to not exist. Because when it gets to a point where all these factors have been satisfied, there will be no need for us. We only exist because there's a need. Yeah. So
you're there, as you say, representing and, you know, talking in the relatable terms, but doing that right at grassroots, right through to the kind of higher echelons. And it's this interface, it's this exchange of ideas, which will, I'm sure, one day lead your mission to be truly accomplished. Now, Ed, one thing that I'm sure you appreciate through your hard work here is that it's amazing what one inspired individual can do, but it's even more amazing when inspired individuals team up. Literally, that was the inception story of the Black Swimming Association, as you've just explained. Now, I know you know a guy that I'm a friend with. He's just astonished me over the years. Talking Michael Wallace, kickoff at 3. Yeah. I know there's a big final coming. Truly astonishing, right? And I know there was a big, well, it was supposed to be final in one day, but I think Mother Nature defeated it. But it's coming up this very weekend. Ed, yep. I know you were there. Just give me your experiences of that kickoff.
Oh, my gosh. It was amazing. And I'm not scared to say this, the issues we have within the Black community, within the youth, is, shall I say, the force. I mean, there's the police force. We have so much problems. And I think this goes, in America, everywhere. Yeah, the George Floyd situation. There's a lot of situations that happened in the UK and such. So when it comes to the police force and it comes to Black and Asian youth, there's a bit of, there's always a bit of tension. Mm-hmm. But seeing what Michael did on that day, he had the police there, he had the youth there, playing football, everybody was interacting, everybody was talking, everybody was engaging. Amazing. We need more of that. We need more of that.
And he's not naive like yourself. He knows that this isn't going to be some kind of magic wand, but he's very much committed, like your good self, to a massive mega vision. It's a privilege to get to know him. One of the things I've really appreciated as well is, well, goodness me, the guy astonishes me. I don't know how he has the energy to do what he does and pay his job, raise a family. Good God, I don't know. But the thing is that astonishes me is that he's always innovating. And what started off as kickoff at 3, great tournament is going to happen again this very weekend, is that it embraces other forms. So there's been tip off at 3, there's been cycle off at 3, and I know swim off at 3.
Swim off at 3,
Just give me an idea of how these synergetic partnerships embrace, come together, and help everybody towards these massive goals.
We can't do everything on our own. It's all about communication, it's all about working together. And towards the main aim. And Swim Off at 3 is something that we are so keen, looking forward to, because that, it's all about the community, and having everybody come together and do something, same as kickoff, or what we saw at kickoff at 3, that is going to be great. So I'm speaking to people on a daily basis within the Black Swimming Association, and we talk about this, and we talk about what's happening in the future, I'm a guy that I have a lot of energy, not as much as Michael, but I have a lot of, and I can't stand still. I always have to think about things, doing different things, and other kind of things. And just looking at what we can achieve is amazing. So I'm looking forward to that.
I tell you what, if we could bottle up both your energy and Michael's energy, my goodness me, I tell you what, mega dollars in that, but it's not all about the money, it's about the money we appreciate. If you're interested to learn more about Swim Off at 3, it's all available on their fantastic website, which is by their original, for want of a better phrase, brand. Check out kickoff@at83.co.uk. Repeat that just one more time, www.kickoff83.co.uk. Ed, in closing, please can you remind me of the fantastic Black Swimming Association's website once again, so we can gain access to a whole array of information?
So the Black Swimming Association's website is thebsa.co.uk. So thebsa.co.uk, and the Blacks Can't Swim website is exactly that, blackscanstream.com, and they'll tell you all about the films and where you can get the films and where you can watch the films and everything else about it. So,
and I certainly would once again stress, get them in your life. Again, I haven't seen the original, I certainly will rectify that, but I was honestly astonished and wowed by Blacks Can't Swim, the sequel, and I'm sure there will be even more. I think there's still further mileage to grow. What would be the sequel to the sequel? I don't know, but there's...
I can't tell you. There's something in the pipeline, but I can't say just yet.
I love it. Watch this space. Ed, is there anything in closing that you'd like to crystallize, remind us all about, or just maybe make us aware of fresh?
Yeah, so just basically, I'm just saying, just let's keep the conversation going. A lot of people said to me that before a film called Blast Counts Film, having a conversation was very, very difficult, you know. Mm-hmm. So what the film's done is it's made it possible for us to have that conversation about something that which previously was very, very difficult mm-hmm. to have. So the conversation, I've broken that barrier with the name Blast Counts Film. Okay, let's have a conversation now. Let's have a discussion. Because every time we talk about it, we are, you know, we are opening up a conversation whereby someone can now learn about water safety, drowning prevention, and swimming, and save a life. Mm-hmm. You know, and so, you know, there's a lot of conversation to be had. So let's keep on having the conversation. Don't be scared now, because I've, like I said, I've opened up the airwaves by calling the film Blast Counts Film. So I've taken it for the team. I've taken one for the team. So now let's just have the conversation.
Not only taking one for the team, Ed, it's surely the way. Just one final quick point on that brilliant point. What I love about the fact that this is cultivated conversation, which is kind of one of my life pleasures, is that I come back in my head to that way that you broke down the excuses people made. Once again, from a man talking about relatability, he was full of excuses in his own self, in his past, very open about that. Because when you have that open conversation, if you can't make somebody else counter think, why is that? No, I can't. If there isn't a good reason in conversation, then all of a sudden it makes you think, and then it just might be possible that you act on that changed thought process, right?
Yes, definitely. And that's what we're doing, you know, just having this conversation. Let's talk about it.
Well, listen, it's been an honor and a privilege to enjoy another conversation with your good self, Ed. I would like to continue to wish you every renewed success and happiness. And I look forward to saluting you one of these fine days when truly saluting mission accomplished. Thanks again.
Thank you very much. Our next interview will be live. We'll actually sit next to each other having a conversation.
I'm not sure the world is ready for that kind of energy interface. To prime people in advance, you know?
Yeah.
Listen, you're a star, sir. You take good care. Appreciate your time once again.
Thank you very much, Tony. Much of a pleasure.